how far back are we going to when this would have been a visible lake?
That's a good question. It's something I've pondered. I've been waiting for an answer for. I think there are contributing factors that drain the lake. No matter what the answer is, Professor Gilson's answer is correct, that one way or the other, it's erosion. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Okay. But clearly the lake drained. I think he said it had drained in recent times, and recent times to a geologist might, you know.
Yeah, right. They're on a different scale of time than we are.
So right. I'm thinking, you know, maybe the professor's thinking something like, you know, it's more than 1,000 years, clearly, probably, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20,000 years ago. But I'll make a few remarks before we get down about what potentially, you know, might have been a contributor. And that's just from a layman's standpoint. To pick up on a couple of high notes that the professor mentioned, I previously mentioned that he was a state geologist and professor. He was born in 1890 and passed away in 1975 and was without a doubt a brilliant man. And he was a Kentucky historian, academic, and geologist. He was a prolific writer, political and geological works. He stated that pertinent facts and hypotheses led him to believe that gradual erosion led to the extension of the Lagoon Lake. I think that conclusion is accurate, as I mentioned. He stated that he felt like the lake had drained in recent times. And as I just mentioned to James, I struggled to come up with an accurate definition of, you know, whether that's 1,000 years or 20,000.
Yeah.
I've given the Lagoon Lake a lot of thought since the discovery of Professor Gilson's 1956 publication. I've spent a lot of time reading and studying related materials. No one may ever pin down when that lake drained, but I have a couple of thoughts that may narrow that time period down. And I had talked to James about this once before. Something that I've been reading a lot about and watching for some time is something that happened here in the United States about 11,000 years ago. The last ice age started about 20,000 years ago, which was the last glacial maximum. Just as things started to warm up about 12,900 years ago, we enter or something substantial happened here in North America. And we don't know if a comet or an asteroid or a meteorite blast hit in the northeast part of the United States on top of the ice shelf. Or they're studying a comet, a crater right now in Greenland. And that could be the culprit if that time frame matches when the ice shelves, about the time the ice shelves were getting ready to melt. Anyway, at that time, the glacier ice in the Lake Erie Basin was at least 1 mile thick. The ice shelf in the Indiana area was several hundred feet thick and had already erased the TA's River north of Indianapolis. When the ice finally did recede, it left the Ohio River in its current position.
TA's, let me stop you, TEAY?
It's pronounced Tays, but it's spelled TEAYS.
Yeah.
And you can read up on this as well, but it was a huge river, not much bigger than the Ohio.
Running like east-west?
It was running east to west, and the Kentucky River fed into it. It fed into the Tays River. Oh. And the Kanawha, the New River, all those rivers flowing east-west down to Virginia were flowing into the Tays River back in those days. But when the ice shelf receded and left the Ohio where it's at, the Tays was gone.
I never thought about the Kentucky River being longer.
Yeah.
Any of those. That's interesting.
Okay, and so the ice in Ohio was also 1,000 feet thick. So at about 12,800 years ago, some kind of cataclysmic event occurred, sending the North American continent back into a mini ice age for 1,200 years, or until 11,600 years ago. So they're calling this Younger Dryas period, and you can read up on that as well. And that period was named after a little flower, a pale yellow flower that only grows in Arctic regions, but have been found in Virginia and other places, you know, petrified, that date back to that Younger Dryas period.
R-I-A-S?
D-R-Y-A-S.
D-R-Y-A-S. Okay.
Younger Dryas.
Okay.
There are several theories as to what occurred. One that is gaining ground is the impact hypothesis. There are several videos that you can watch on YouTube, and some of those are, who knows whether they're accurate or not. It's all speculation. But Wikipedia gives a good description of the Younger Dryas period, and some of their information is seemingly accurate. You can decide for yourself. What we do know is that approximately 120 megafauna species were wiped out, in less than 100 years. And that included mammoths, Columbia elephants, camels, horses, American lions, the giant ground sloths, saber-toothed tigers, an unbelievable array of large animals. In fact, at that time, North America had the largest population of megafauna on the planet.
In this event you're talking about, so what we're describing is an explosion. It either exploded on impact or exploded just before impact, created so much smoke and particulate matter in the atmosphere that it blocked the sun for a period of time that all the flora died, which meant the fauna had nothing to eat, so they died off. Is that close to right?
That's one of the hypotheses, yes. And a lot of research is going on right now to try to determine what it was that actually happened. Some things that we do know that are 100% fact is there was a large body of water out west of Canada that when the glaciers started to melt, or possibly they broke on their own, but the state of Washington, the Dakotas, Montana, all the way down to Idaho, and I forget what they call that event, but there was a huge freshwater lake up above Canada that was being held back by the ice shelf up there. And it didn't just release once. Over time, it released several times when the ice would break free or maybe melt or whatever. But you can do some research on that too. And they know for a fact that happened. And all those badlands out there is what was created from those floods.
Okay, that's right.
So some of the scientists are thinking there might have been another large body of water north of us in Canada that was being held back by the north of Lake Erie and in that area up there. But I'm talking about a huge amount of water. So huge that one of the things that they're considering is that if it did break, I mean, there would have been massive flooding all over the eastern United States, clearly, but that if all that ice water made it into the ocean, and they're studying that too, that it would have interrupted the ocean flow that goes all the way up to past Greenland. And in fact, they think it might have even stopped for a while. But I don't know. I still don't see that. Flooding.
Meaning there was a backup of water, and that could have created something like this Pleistocene lake that we're discussing today.
Well, no, I think that lake had been there long before that.
Okay.
The Lagoons Lake has been there a long, long time. I'm leading up to the only thoughts I have about what might have contributed to its downfall, but even with all this flooding, I can't see that wiping out all of the megafauna, and also all the humans disappeared. And humans didn't come back to eastern United States for 1,000 years in numbers. But anyway, this hypothesis about an air blast of some kind or a comet hitting the Earth would be something that, just like it did the dinosaurs, that could wipe out all the megafauna and the humans. Anyway, I guess time will tell, but I think in our lifetime,
we'll learn.
I hope I live that long.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're going to find out what happened. And I think that even if it was a comet, an air blast, or even if it was great flooding, that here we are in central Kentucky, we're only 60 miles from Louisville, and the ice shelf was not further up too far up in Indiana, but clearly there would have been one way or the other. There would have been massive flooding, in this area. And I think that it could have been a factor, you know, to the draining of the lagoon's lake. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think I've just about...
Explain to me that why would the flooding cause this to drain? Am I missing?
Well, I think this. The lagoon's lake had been flowing for, you know, for thousands and thousands of years. And water going over the, you know, and over those laminated limestone ledges down that you can see right now on the roadway there going into St. Joe. But I think if you introduce massive amounts of water, that you're going to accelerate the erosion, you know, not only going over that dam, but on both sides of it, all around it. That could ramp up the erosion, you know, the erosion of that dam. But clearly, okay, it was major, you know, there's been some major water come through there. And if you go down there today, I mean, even in the river, it's rock bottom. So, I mean, all the rock is removed and you're down to rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about the bed of the lagoons being this very deep, it's all like silt, right? It's not, yeah, and I've always looked at it, and it was always explained to me that's really good farmland, really, really rich farmland, isn't it?
It is. It's very good farmland, and clearly it's very deep, and that farmland, I'm sure over the centuries have contributed to, you know, improving the bottoms further down the river in times of flood.
Sure. That makes sense. Right. Yeah, it got displaced and went further downstream.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm really interested, though, one of the earliest things you said, that this Pleistocene lake is unique in Kentucky and possibly only one of a handful of similar lakes on Earth. Is that what you said? Or Gilson?
Professor Gilson said that it was unique. There was no other place. He said there was no other place in Kentucky like it. And he said, in fact, there's only a few places on the earth that would be a similar, you know, that were created like that in a similar circumstance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your walnut trees, that's pretty fascinating. Talk a little bit about what you conclude about why they were where they were. Is this the event you're talking about that all of a sudden created all this earth on top of what used to be a forest bottom, I suppose?
Yes and no. First of all, areas like Clear Creek or Knob Creek and all those areas down there would have been areas just like at any lake in Kentucky, you know, that's flowing, Green River. Mm-hmm. But all debris, trash, trees, everything upstream is always coming down towards, you know, that area. So, you know, I tell my friends today that it's only a matter of time till we start finding, you know, woolly mammoth skeletons and other megafauna skeletal remains somewhere in the lagoon's area. I mean, they may be 15, 20 feet down, but they're there. And that's just like the tree, you know, and the trees that all got brought down river, settled in that area and were eventually buried by sand and silt.
Boy, wouldn't that be something?
At least we know why trees are buried deep below St. Joe now. Did you have any more questions about the...
I'm also... One of the things I want to talk about is a little bit about in your lifetime of living in this area, and even as a boy until adulthood, walking around, looking at the ground, collecting things. Tell me about some of the stuff you found and what it has told you about either the geologic events in this area or human activity.
Okay, so contrary to... We know that humans have been in the United States at least 16,000-20,000 years. Some of the oldest sites are Meadowcroft over in on the East Coast, and we know that humans were around here 16,000 years at that point. There's a place in South America, Monte Verde, that I think they've dated human life back to 20,000 years. There's a place out in the Midwest, I think, that dates back to about 16,000 years as well. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, I think humans have probably been here 30,000 years. So we know they've been here, you know, pretty conclusive about 15 or 16,000 years. So that means that people people were hunting megafauna up and down that lake, on those terraces around that lake, long before that lake drained. That's probably pretty accurate. And I think it also explains some of the reasons why that artifacts were so abundant. And it's hard to find them today because of agriculture's change to no-till. But back when I was growing up, it was almost like every year that the ground would be plowed back up along those river bluffs and above the lagoons. You were certain to find, you know, broken points, good points, all kinds of things, axes, whatever it is. And you would also find areas where the ground was black, maybe where fires had been burned. That was pretty common, and there's a number of places up around Newmarket that's like that.
It's because that was such a significant body of water, naturally, you're going to have a higher concentration of human activity around because that's where the action was. That's where the water was. That's where the animals were, fishing, whatever. And so they were going to live around there.
Everything was right there.
Yeah.
And I think that explains very well why there's such an abundance of artifacts in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll also find shells. And I'm sure there's plenty of fossils there. A lot of those are in fossil beds, but you'll find fossils from time to time. I have no idea whether they're 1,000 years old or 100,000 years old or 1,000,000 years old. But something that we would often find would be little shells and clam shells and pieces of shells on that high ground. Hmm. The clam shells, I can understand possibly that the Native Americans were eating those, and that's how those shells got there. But some of those small shells, I don't know how they would have, you know, been on that high ground, unless they came from that lake.
Right, right. I remember about 10 years ago when they were starting to redo the road to Bradfordsville, they came upon a site where there had been some early Native American activity, and of course that means they stopped. And so I went out there and talked to them. They had a group, I think, from UK who were doing some archaeology work and doing a dig there, and they thought that it was an area, I'm not clear about this, you can probably tell me this, were early Americans, were they relatively permanent settlers in Kentucky, or were they migratory? Were they following the herds? As I understood, what they told me was this was a place they would come once a year. Whenever they came through, they would come back to this same spot. This would have been just, this was right around Josh Cox Road, where it comes out onto 49. What's your understanding? Were they here all the time? Were they passing through with some regularity, like I said, following the herds or whatever?
I think both.
Mm-hmm.
I think both. We were talking about going back to the lagoons for a minute. In the early 1960s, before a lot of that farmland up in the lagoons was marshland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned to you one time, I could go back there in the early mornings and to go fishing, and you could hear thousands of geese up in those, you know, up in those marshes. And,
yeah.
And I mean, that was clearly would have been food for people.
Sure. Yeah.
So even if that lake drained 10,000 years ago, and I think that's about when it in all probability, it drained somewhere in that time period, but that lake would have still remained, in many respects, a very popular place to hunt.
Right.
Anyway, so I think people were always coming and going. And some of the latest people were the Mississippian people, and they were based in Cuyahoga, Illinois. And their mounds are still over there right now. But some of the mounds that W.T. Knott talks about in Marion County in his book,
those are
Mississippian mounds. And so that culture was
burial mounds you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So that culture was widespread, not only over there in Illinois, but also in this area. And then some of them all the way down into Georgia and Louisiana.
The ones he's talking about, were they near or around Raywick? Weren't there some mounds found around Raywick?
There were.
Okay.
And sometime maybe we'll do a podcast on that. I've got some more information you might be interested in regarding that.
I would love to.
But anyway, yeah, so those people were coming and going here all the time. And but there was certainly before all the megafauna died, I think in some of the estimates I've read, there were like six, scientists think that there might have been as many as 60, I think they said 60 million woolly mammoths. Woolly mammoth population before that extinction occurred.
Yeah. In Kentucky?
No, all over North America.
Okay, right. Other than, what's it called, Big Bone Lick up in on the way to Cincinnati, I'm unaware of too many other places in Kentucky, or maybe any others, where there's been a concentration of found megafauna bones. Are you aware of any?
Not too many.
I think Thomas Jefferson had a lot of that brought back to Washington. A lot of those bones are not there, probably most of them.
He did, and you've got to be in the right places to find those things. And typically, Kentucky's always had a mild climate since the end of the last ice age. So you have to wonder about how long things, can survive. But I'm thinking down there in that St. Joe area, especially in those where there was a lot of mud and silt and animals might have been trapped that got in the water and couldn't get back out. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that if I was going to go look somewhere to dig, it would be down in that area,
right?
Probably back up in the Sturge Creek area or down in the Clear Creek area. But in those areas would be prime places.
Wow, that's fascinating. That would be something. Are there any other concluding thoughts or any other points that we didn't get to?
No, I think we covered everything. I've always been fascinated with the lagoons and I guess, waited an entire lifetime to figure, and finally found out that there was indeed a lake there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably a lot of people in the area have no idea that once existed, but it's really a significant part of this county and part of our, certainly our history.
You may not know the history of it, but I think you almost can't be there and not know that you're in an unusual place. It seems unusual to me, just riding through there. And then you look at a map, and like, I didn't grow up really knowing the extent of it. But then when you do look at a map and you go, well, yeah, New Market, going up next to Jessetown, yeah. Then it goes on over the 68. Yeah, you can see it. It's pretty fascinating when you look at it like that.
It's pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fascinating. It's hard to follow some of the, some of the information that Professor Gilson has in his book.
Mm-hmm.
Not being a skilled geologist, but it's just fascinating to read through that book.
Right.
And yeah, it really is. He had to say about that and how that was all created. But who knows? The last glacial maximum they call it, I guess. He calls it a Pleistocene lake, and the Pleistocene era goes back to about 2.5 million years ago, and comes forward to about 11,700 years ago. So somewhere during that time frame,
meaning an ice age?
No, Pleistocene era itself. The last glacial maximum, the last ice age we had goes back 20,000 years to 11,700 years ago.
Well, I'm going to impose on you one of these days before too long to we'll get in a car and we'll go look at some of this stuff and see it in the flesh, and the cheeseburger at the St. Joe Market's on me. If you'll do that for me, I'd love to do something like that. Go around and see some of the parts where you can actually see, especially this Belltown Fault.
Yeah, and you can drive to a lot of those areas we're talking about. But still, yet if you really want to see, what happened, an aerial view, you can clearly go to Google Earth and zoom up over that area and look down on the rock quarry and the Twin Knobs and the Belltown Knobs. You'll see just exactly where that fault is at.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you know that it ends at St. Joe where the dam was, and one thing led to another, but I just wish that lake was still standing there today.
Oh my, absolutely. All right. Well, there may not be a Brady. There may not be a Stephen Brady if that thing never did drain. Where would you have?
May not.
Who knows? Who knows? I hope so. Thank you so much, Steve. This has been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's long overdue, and I'm going to take you up, but we're going to do another one, and we'll talk about those mounds around Raywick and I could probably pick your brain about a lot of topics.
Yeah, that's going to take more time. We might have to end up going to get a steak.
Well, all right. We can do that. That's right.
No problem.
All right. Thank you again, Steve. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us.